Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. Always wonderful to be with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Today is Wednesday, the 30th of April, the last day of the month of April. We are already into the new month of the Jewish calendar. Today is the 2nd of Iyar, of the month of Iyar in the Jewish calendar. Yesterday was the first day of the month of Iyar, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Iyar is a special month in the Jewish calendar, like every month, but there's always significance and depth and important messages that the months bring us and teach us. Iyar is the month after Nisan. Nisan is the month of the redemption of the Jewish people. Iyar is post-Pesach, and they're heading towards Sivan and Shavuos. It's the month in which we count the Omer. Iyar in Hebrew is Aleph Yud Yud Resh, and the acronym for that is Ani Hashem Roifecha. Aleph is for Ani, and Yud and Yud is reference to Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and Reish is Roifecha. So Iyar is a month of healing. There are a few reasons for that. That's a time for us to heal our physical and spiritual ailments. So if you are in need of refuah, so many are, so have in mind that this month is a month that Hashem heals the Jewish people. Anoichi Hashem Roifecha. So I have special kavona that please God it should be a month of healing for all of us and for all of Klal Yisrael. Iyar also stands for Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Rachel. Stands for the three patriarchs and the great matriarch Rachel Imenu, and their power, their schus, their energy is felt very strongly in this month of Iyar. So please God, it should be a month of Iyar, of healing and of connecting to the energies of our great patriarchs and matriarchs, as a month of brocha, of blessing and atzlocha and success for all of us and for all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, great. So let's continue. I wanted to mention the first few days of this month and their importance and their significance. So let's start off. Well, maybe let's just kick off by mentioning that today is Yom HaZikaron. Yom HaZikaron is actually usually on the 4th of Iyar, but this year it falls out on a Friday, so the Israeli government said that we should commemorate today, last night and today, which is the 2nd of Iyar, and here in South Africa tomorrow we are celebrating, and throughout the world, celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut on Thursday, so it doesn't clash with Shabbos. So this is the day we remember those fallen heroes that died putting their lives on the line, Al Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name by protecting the Jewish people. And that is the ultimate sacrifice that they made. And they certainly are in a very high place in the eternal world, in Shemayim, because they died Al Kiddush Hashem. They died sanctifying God's name by protecting God's people, the Jewish people. And so we remember their tremendous bravery and sacrifice, and their souls should all have an aliyah, and our hearts are with their families and their loved ones who have contributed to this tremendous sacrifice to the Jewish people. And please God, we should see the end of suffering and war and only blessing and peace for all of the Jewish people and for all of the world. So let's discuss yesterday, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. We mentioned a little bit about the month of Iyar. It's the name of the month of Iyar. And in fact, yesterday is being Rosh Chodesh Iyar is the day in the year 372 before the Common Era when the foundation of the Second Temple was laid in Jerusalem. And this is recorded in Sefer Ezra and Perek Gimel, Sefer Ezra. The grandson of the Jewish king Zerubbabel, led of a Jewish king, sorry, and his name was Zerubbabel. He led the first band of Jews back from the Babylonian exile. So remember, the Jews were exiled. They were defeated by Nebuchadnezzar, who was the great king and leader of Babylonia, of Babel. And he exiled the majority of the Jewish people. And his granddaughter was Vashti, and she married Ahasuerus. And we have the Purim story 70 years later of the destruction of the first temple, a little bit less than 70 years later. And so Zerubbabel, he led a revival back in the land of Israel. And he helped clear away the charred heaps of debris which occurred on the site of the temple. And the foundation was laid at great public excitement and rejoicing. The second temple was then later was delayed, the building of the second temple, and was only completed and allowed. So he started the process, Zerubbabel, in the year 370 on this day, the first of Iyar. But it was only completed a number of years later after the great Purim miracle, and which was about 355 before the Common Era. And then the second temple was built by Ezra when there was a full-blown return from the exile and the rebuilding of the temple. Under Darius, who was a son of Esther and Ahasuerus, and that was built around about 349 before the Common Era. And the second temple stood for 420 years before it was destroyed by the Romans in 70 of the Common Era. Today, the Western Wall is a remnant of the temple complex, the focal point of Jewish prayers for millennia. Remember, all of this is before the advent of Islam, before Muslims are even invented. The Jews are already been in the land of Israel for over 1,000 years. Second temple is built. Sorry, over 1,000 years. First, the second temple is rebuilt, and they're there it's destroyed for 420 years until it's destroyed in 70 of the Common Era. Islam only comes about in the year 600. So more than 500 years later, does Islam even begin to exist? Is it even born? So we're already there 2,000 years, and they claim that we stole their land, which is absolutely crazy and ludicrous and a complete distortion of history. Okay, so that's the first of Iyar yesterday. Second of Iyar is an interesting day. Second of Iyar is when Tzfas was conquered in 1948. So we have Yom HaAtzmaut. We're celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut tomorrow, and the celebration of the independence of the State of Israel. And on the 15th of May, 1948, which was Hay Iyar 1948, was when the state was declared. But the Arab armies already had attacked before then. There was a war raging. And there were a number of hotbeds of the clashes that took place. And from the time when the United Nations in November 1947 declared that they supported partition, already the Arabs attacked Israel. And there were many skirmishes, and the war had begun. And on this day, the second of the year, a few days before the state was declared, so there was a great victory for the Jewish forces in the holiest city of Tzfas. Tzfas is the highest point in the Galilee and rose to prominence in the 16th century. As we know, many of the great Kabbalists moved to Tzfas in the 1500s, in the middle of the 1500s. And many of them actually ran away from Spain after the Inquisition in 1492. And so in the 1500s, 16th century, Tzfas became a great center of Jewish life in the land of Israel. The city was the backdrop for Kabbalah, the Renaissance of Kabbalah. That's where the Arizal was. That's where Rabbi Chaim Vital was. The Arizal's Talmid. That's where Moshe Kadovera was. That's where the great and holy Ramah, who was exiled from Spain, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, also was in Tzfas, and it became a great center of Jewish life. There were Arab riots in 1929, so there was always a Jewish population in Tzfas, and when the Jews started returning back to the land of Israel en masse, so there were Arab riots in many cities, including Tzfas. In 1948, Tzfas was included in the Jewish side of the partition. Due to its high altitude, it was sought out by both the Jews and the Arabs because of its military significance. The Haganah and Palmach troops stationed there were outnumbered 10 to 1 in Tzfas. The odds were not good at all. The city had been under siege for months. One night, the IDF soldiers used an artillery piece called a Davidka. It didn't have do much damage, but it made a very loud noise. In fact, there's something called Davidka Square on Rehov Yafo. At the top of Rehov Yafo, just before the Shuk, there's like an old Davidka there. It's like an artillery piece that is, there's a monument of it. You can see it over there. It's called Davidka Square. So the Davidka was not a very effective tool of war, because it didn't, the artillery shells that it shot were not so accurate and were not so large. However, it made a huge amount of noise. And they used it for the first time on at this time in Iyar, in Tzfas 1948. And not only did it make a big noise after they just started using it, but it also began to rain that night, which is very unusual at this time of year in the land of Israel, because it's spring going into summer, and there's no more rain in Israel. And the legend goes that a local Arab woman asked a Jewish woman what was that loud weapon that the Jews used. And the Jewish woman said, "We have atomic bombs." Remember, it's 1948, just after World War II. So this rumor began, and within 24 hours, all of the Arab troops fled out of Sfat, and Sfat was then entirely in Jewish hands, and has remained so until today. So today, the 2nd of Iyar, we remember that great battle and that great victory of the Jewish forces in the city of Tzfat. Okay, so let's continue. Tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow, is the 3rd of Iyar. And the 3rd of Iyar is a significant date, which we'll discuss in a moment after this break.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 High FM.
So tomorrow is the 3rd of Iyar. 3rd of Iyar is significant because on the 3rd of Iyar in 1555, so it's actually a very similar time to when the revival of Sfat, or the great Jewish making Sfat this great center of Kabbalah, that in exactly that same time, the Jews of Italy were martyred in the city of Ancona in Italy. Pope Paul IV had instituted a number of anti-Jewish measures, and he was particularly hard on Converso Jews who had fled the Iberian Peninsula and reverted back to their Judaism upon arriving in Italy. So remember, 1492 is the Inquisition. Jews had a choice. Either they would bow down to the cross and convert to Christianity, or they had to leave Spain. If they remained in Spain and continued to practice as Jews, they would be murdered, they would be killed. And likewise, if they were conversos, which means that they pretended to be Christian, but really they were undercover, secretly practicing as Jews, and that's why we have these many stories of women going into their cellar and on Friday afternoon lighting candles, because they would do so secretly, and it became family traditions for many centuries. So if they were caught being conversos, in other words, still practicing Jews but pretending to be Christians, so they were expelled, they were murdered, they were burnt at the stake. And we see that many Jews fled Spain and went to Italy. Italy was a Catholic country, and they therefore in Italy also pretended to be Christians, but they really practiced Judaism. And Pope Pius IV was very much against this, and 51 Jews were found doing so. They were arrested. 25 of them were burnt alive at the stake. This tragedy sent shockwaves throughout the Jewish world. A wealthy Jewish, but by the name of Donna Gracia Nassi, organized a boycott against the city of Ancona. The boycott caused much dissent among the leaders of the Jewish community. Many were opposed because they feared harsh backlash from the Pope as we see, there's always this debate in the Jewish community. Do we stand up for ourselves? Do we stand up for what's right? With the great danger of there being a backlash against us, a minority community in a foreign country. And the first, this was the first recorded time in Jewish history that Jews attempted to utilize the economic power and make changes for the good. This is marked as the beginning of Jewish advocacy. Very interesting. So already dating back to the 16th century, Jewish advocacy was employed. And Baruch Hashem, in our modern world, Jewish advocacy is a very powerful tool and something that we should continue to use in order to strengthen the Jewish people, in order to protect the Jewish people, in order to defend the rights of the Jewish people. Right to this day, we see how important Jewish advocacy is. We have these battles going on with the major universities in the United States that the Trump administration is blocking funds because of their anti-Semitism and because of their behavior since October 7th. And they're taking Trump to court. They're taking there's a video that they're taking. There was an amazing video made about the protests at Harvard, and they're trying to block that video, which exposes the anti-Semitism on campus. And so Jews shouldn't be self-hating Jews. We all should play our part in protecting, in defending, in strengthening the Jewish people, and we should stand up bravely and stand up with courage and defend the truth and defend the strength of our cause. So it's significant that the third of Iyar is really when that began in Jewish history, in the modern Jewish world, and it has continued ever since. Okay, so let's continue to discuss these dates. I want to discuss then Thursday, which is tomorrow. I'm getting confused. Thursday is actually Friday, right? The 4th of Iyar, Friday is the 4th of Iyar. So I wanted to mention about Friday. It is a significant Jewish date because we see Friday is actually the yahrzeit of a very great Jew by the name of Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of Brisk. So Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of Yeshiva University, YU, whose yahrzeit was recently, he was a grandson of the original founder of the Brisker dynasty, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. He was a very famous Talmud Chacham, and he authored a sefer, a very famous sefer, a commentary on the Torah called Beis Halevi. He was born in the year 1810. He died in the year 1892. And in 1854, Rabbi Soloveitchik joined the leadership of the famed Volozhin Yeshiva, which was the center of Jewish scholarship at the time in Lithuania, what we call the mother of yeshivas, who is known for his great piety. It is said that his fear of sin was comparable to an ordinary person's fear when his life is in danger. So if our life is in danger for some reason, we are very frightened and we respond appropriately and very quickly, the adrenaline goes. He felt that with regards to Yerushalayim, which is an amazing achievement of a human being generating that in one's personality. He became the rabbi of Brisk in Lithuania, and this launched the famous Brisker rabbinic dynasty. His son was the famed Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, whose approach to Gemara learning transformed, revolutionized learning in the Jewish world, and is still primarily followed in the major Lithuanian yeshivas in the world, is the derech, is the style of Rabbi Chaim. And so that was the beginning of the famed Brisker dynasty. So Friday, the 4th of Iyar, is the yahrzeit of the founder of the Brisker dynasty, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi. And then the last date I want to mention is, of course, the 5th of Iyar, which is the anniversary of the independence, the declaration of independence of the State of Israel in 1948. So on the 5th of Iyar 1948, although we're celebrating it tomorrow, it's a bit earlier, but the real day is Shabbos, the 5th of Iyar. David Ben-Gurion on the 5th of Iyar declared the establishment of the modern state of Israel and became its first prime minister. The event took place at Tel Aviv Museum, now called Independence Hall, and was kept secret until it happened due to concerns that the British would stop it or the Arabs would attack it. In almost prophetic words, in 1897, after the first Zionist Congress, Theodor Herzl wrote in his diary, "In Basel, I founded the Jewish state. Perhaps in 5 years, or certainly 50, everyone will agree." 51 years later, the world witnessed it happened. Isn't that incredible? So Herzl almost prophetically said within 50 years we'd have a Jewish state. And it was 51 years. The declaration was read at 6 p.m. and went into effect at midnight. When the British mandate officially came to an end, Israel was immediately, we mentioned already the war was on previously from already November 47, but it became an official declaration of war from the four Arab states of Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and Iraq. And the fighting lasted 10 months, and although there were some truce periods in between. In the end, the under-trained, barely organized, and minimally armed newly found Israeli Defense Force was able not only to defend the fledgling country, but conquer 60% of the land promised to the Arabs under the UN partition. So remember, the UN partition was made in November 47. The UN voted 2/3 majority in the General Assembly in favor of partition, which was an amazing story in and of itself. Absolutely miraculous that that happened. First time ever and only time ever that the Eastern and Western blocs voted in favor of the same bill in the United Nations. And so Israel incredibly achieved its 2/3 majority that it needed for partition. The Jews immediately accepted partition, even though we were given a very small part of the land, even though we were given the worst parts of the land, the parts that were almost uninhabitable, the desert, they were the arid parts, the unfertile parts of Israel. But as Ben-Gurion said, actually it wasn't Ben-Gurion, it was the first chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Herzog, said, "We'll take what we can get and we will build with what we have." And that's exactly what happened. The Jews accepted partition, the Arabs rejected partition, and immediately attacked Israel. And when the state was declared in May 48, so they officially sent their armies to destroy the state of Israel. And Israel, were 600,000 Jews living in Israel. There were a bunch of refugees. There was no army. There was no support from the world powers. They had no money. They were up against unbelievable odds. Although the revisionist historians will lie and tell you that Israel was always more powerful than the Arab armies, that's nonsense. Israel, I just read an article today that George C. Marshall advised President Truman. President Truman's support for the Declaration of the State was very important and significant. There's the whole amazing story with President Chaim Weizmann, who convinced Truman to support the partition plan, to support also the Declaration of the State of Israel. And remember, there was a huge amount of up and down and controversy about it, and there was a big split in the United States government. You had those supporters of the Israel and the State of Israel, those that were against it. And Marshall, General George C. Marshall, was one of the most powerful figures and popular figures in America at the time. He was the great general of World War II who led American troops and was the brains behind the victory of the Allies. And remember, as President Roosevelt said, Marshall really should have led the D-Day attacks. He should have been the one who oversaw them. But Roosevelt said, "I can't let go of Marshall. I can't let him go to Europe and be without him in the States." And so that's why they chose the upcoming star in the United States General Staff, which was Dwight D. Eisenhower. So that's why Eisenhower was the one who led the D-Day attacks. So Marshall said that Marshall was an anti-Semite, and he did not support the Declaration of State of Israel, and he pretended that it was for military reasons. He said there is no way possible. That's the article I read today. There's no way possible, was written by the Washington Institute, that Israel could win this war militarily. They're going to be wiped out. So why should we support an entity that's going to be destroyed? It'll just put us in a difficult position. And therefore, we certainly shouldn't destroy them, shouldn't support them. And so there was a split in the United States. and Truman, who had just taken over after the death of, in 45, that's when Roosevelt died and Truman took over. So now it's 3 years into his presidency. And he refused to meet any of the Zionist leaders. The Zionists wanted to meet Truman and wanted to try and win him over to support the declaration of the state. And he wouldn't meet them. And they got hold of his old friends, whose name was Eddie Jacobson. The two of them had a haberdashery business in Kansas City. And Eddie called him and said, "Mr. President, will you meet my friend Chaim Weizmann?" He said, "No." Eddie then, with his own money — the Zionist movement didn't pay for his ticket — he flew from Missouri to Washington. And unannounced, he came to the Oval Office. And the president's secretary said, "Eddie Jacobson, I'm out to see you." He said, let him in, came in, and he said to the president, "I have one favor to ask you, and that is meet Chaim Weizmann." And apparently, as it's written in the biography of Truman, that he was very upset. He felt it was wrong for them to go to Eddie and try and get to him through his best friend, Eddie, the Jew. But he said, "Eddie, I can't turn you down. You're my friend, and I won't say no to you." And he said, "Okay, I'll meet him for 15 minutes. A 15-minute meeting. He arranged the meeting. 15-minute meeting turned into 2 hours. And Truman writes in his diary that he was very impressed with Weizmann and very impressed with the argument he put forward and the need for a Jewish state. And he told Weizmann then that he would immediately support the declaration of the State of Israel, which was very significant diplomatically for Israel in those early days. As we mentioned, the Israeli forces were completely underarmed, undertrained, were no match for the 5 Arab armies that attacked them. But Baruch Hashem, Israel prevailed. And unfortunately, encouraged by their own leaders, 700,000 Arabs fled their homes in what was to become Israel. They had been told to get out of the way while the Arab armies would wipe out the Jews. They were very confident, the leaders. Then they could return and spread out and take whatever they want. Not only did that not happen, but those same leaders did not absorb the refugees into their countries. In contrast, nearly 700,000 Jews were expelled from Arab countries after the State of Israel declared. All of those refugees were absorbed into the new Jewish state. And so that's why we have this Arab refugee problem, because the Arab states didn't absorb their refugees and the Jews didn't tell them to go. They went based on the advice of their own leaders. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Let's end off with one or two interesting ideas from this week's Torah reading. So we see, we read a double parsha this week, Tazria Metzora. And Tazria Metzora deals primarily with this interesting condition called Tzaras. I think that's where they get the name psoriasis from. But it's very different from that. Tzaras was not a physical, but a spiritual ailment, a spiritual sickness, a spiritual disease. And it manifested — this spiritual illness manifested in some different ways. It manifested in the either on the skin of a person or on the clothes of a person or even on the walls of the house of a person. So with regards to that third category, on the walls of the house, so we see in this week's parsha where the Torah tells us about one notices this on the walls, I don't want to say mold, but something strange growing on the walls of the house. And one would then have to get the kohen. The kohen would have to identify whether it was just mold and damp or actually tzaras, a manifestation of the spiritual illness. And if the kohen did declare that it was tameh, that wall or those bricks would have to be removed, would have to be destroyed. And so Rashi says a very interesting thing about this. He says, Besura hi lachem. It actually was a good thing. Why? Because this tzaras would form on the home. The kohen would come and look at it, and he would define whether it was actually tzaras or not.
If it was tsaras, says Rashi, so then those bricks would have to be removed and destroyed. When those bricks were removed, very often the Jews who had come into the land of Israel would find treasure in the walls, says Rashi, that the previous inhabitants, the Canaanites, who were defeated by the Jews coming in, when they knew the Jews were in the desert, so they hid their treasures in the walls in case they were defeated by the Jews. And by the way, those Canaanites do not exist anymore, and they have disappeared for more than 2,500 years from the history of the world. So they are not the Arabs that are in the region, far from it. They are a different people. And they were faded away many, many millennia ago. And so the Jews who now found this funny condition on their walls now removed those bricks or those stones, whatever the wall was made of, destroyed them, and they would find this treasure. They would find gold and silver, which is a very interesting thing, isn't it? So that's what Rashi says. It was a basura toiva. It was actually not a bad thing, but a good thing. Whereas the rest of Taras was a very bad thing and indicative of a person's faltering spiritually, falling spiritual levels. So the question is, the Chidush Arim, the great Chidush Arim asks, who was the first Gerer Rebbe, he says that weren't there easier ways for Hashem to enable the Jews to be wealthy and to find money and to achieve and to get riches? This is quite a strange way. Hashem has many ways for us to give us money, as we all know. So why was it in this almost peculiar way? So he says an amazing thing. He says that we see that when the Jews came out of Mitzrayim, so they were commanded before they left to go and ask their Egyptian neighbors for some of their riches. And they would say, I've noticed this gold and this silver, and would you lend it to me? Can I borrow it? And it's a lashon of yishalu. They requested to borrow some of their stuff, but everybody knew that they wouldn't return. So the Chidush Arim says, why did they use that lashon? Because the Egyptians knew that they were leaving them, begging them to even say, take whatever you want, just go. And the Jews knew that Moshe told them that they were leaving imminently. So why was it lashon of yishalu? It says because that was the first time that the Jewish people came into money. And it's a very important lesson to remember that the money that we receive is a loan from Hashem. It's not our money. It's Hashem's money. Yes, you work hard. Yes, you're smart and entrepreneurial or successful in your profession, whatever it may be. And there's no denying it takes a tremendous amount of effort and hard work. But our success is by the grace of Hashem. Hashem decides to bless some and to not bless others with financial wealth. And when we're fortunate enough to be blessed with financial wealth, so we must remember that it's a loan from Hashem. It's Hashem's money. There was a story recently of a yeshiva bocha who wanted to get a job from one of the wealthiest families in America, one of the wealthiest Jewish families in America. And he was a friend with the grandson, and he got a meeting with this patriarch who built this massive empire. And this young man, this young bocha, said to the wealthy man, how is it that you became so wealthy? And the man responded and he said, because God knows I know what to do with his money. And that's why he made me wealthy. And this is a very generous family that's built large parts of Jewish America. And he was right. That's exactly what he did. So that's what this Lashon of Yish'alu says, the Chidush Arim. And likewise, the Sefer Milchemes Yehuda says that there's a very important lesson we learn over here with the money in the walls, that in order to access that money, they would have to destroy the walls of the home. And that's a warning to the Jewish people for all time, that the money, yes, is loaned from Hashem, and also the home represents the family. We should be very careful not to let the gold ruin our home. And how often do we see that people come into wealth and it causes havoc to them and their family? It causes marriages to break up for various reasons. It can do so. It can cause problems with the children and chinuch. How often does one see that from wealthy homes, the children are too spoiled and They grow up entitled without boundaries. It's a great test for wealthy families. And of course, with regards to inheritance, when people inherit money. So, you know, we so often see families breaking up as a result of it. Go ask any estate attorney about the horror stories that they've seen with regards to inheritance. My Rosh Shiva would say, he doesn't understand why people work hard to make so much money, build an empire in order for their children to fight over it. So that is also a great danger when it comes to wealth, that the fact that Hashem did it this way and put it in the walls, and the walls got tsaras, and they broke down the walls, and they saw the money in the walls, is a warning to Klal Yisrael, don't let gold, don't let wealth destroy your home. Your priority should be that the home comes first, and the relationships in the home come first, and the money is secondary in many different respects. And that's a great and important lesson for all of us to learn. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Let's just end off once we mentioned this interesting idea of the tsaras and the walls of the homes. And Rashi said it was actually a good thing that they would knock down some of the walls and find treasures. That's how Hashem would lead them to the gold and the treasures. I heard a beautiful idea from Rabbi Shmuel Silva, which is very interesting. And that is, he said, from this pasuk, one could draw the following metaphor in one's life, that the home represents our lives. A home represents a person's life. We live in the home. It represents a person. And sometimes in our own lives, we build our homes in the promised land. So this was the Jewish people coming to the land that Hashem had promised them. And they were now successfully building their homes. Yet there was something missing. There was an issue. There was tsaras on the walls of the home that had to be knocked down. And sometimes it's the same in our lives. We reach the promised land, we set certain goals, we have certain things we want to achieve in our lives, and we go ahead and successfully achieve them with the help of Hashem. And yet still, we don't feel fulfilled, we don't feel contented, we don't feel settled in those achievements. You know, sometimes a person has a bit of a wobble in their life, you know, maybe somebody gets a migraine, and I've just had a recent bout of gout, which is very painful. And so, you know, no matter what the bracha is in your life, there's so much bracha around you, but you just can't focus on any of it because you have this debilitating pain. So it's a similar thing, that sometimes we achieve many great things, but there's something that's blocking all that blessing. And that's represented by this tsaras on the walls of the house. And so there are often those things that we need to remove. We need to remove those stones and remove those walls that are blocking the blessing, and open up the channel of blessing. And these negative stones could be many different things in our lives. They could be our bad midas, our character traits that we don't work on sufficiently, our taiva, our desire for physical pleasure, our gaiva, our arrogance, our jealousy of others. They could be in the form of addictions that we need to address, addictions of drugs, of alcohol, of pornography, of sex. They could be in the form of toxic relationships that we need to deal with or we need to end. So we all know those areas that we need to work on, those hidden areas. Everybody knows the hidden parts of their home. Maybe they're not seen from the outside, but those living in their home know those issues, and certainly individuals, the home of the individual. We know about the walls of our own home and what needs to be addressed and what needs to be sorted out. So we all need to look at that and remove those negative stones. And that will enable us to enjoy the blessings in our lives and to achieve a sense of completion and a sense of contentment. Thank you so much for listening. And have a wonderful day.